All right. How you doing there, sir? Ready to go? What do you say? Feel like making a little magic today? Is that what this is called? All right, Reggie, are you ready? I certainly am. Keep those levels where they're at. I'll give you the three S's and the countdown. You give me the music, and I will give you a podcast. How about that? Sounds like a deal. All right? I'll hold up your end, my end. You hold up your end. Oh, why? What was that? Do you know? No, just some kind of computer world space junk or something, just flowing through the atmosphere of the internet. All right, are you ready to go? Let's do this. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. Lo and behold, there we are. But don't forget, you should rate and subscribe to this podcast. And also, you should get your butt out there and tell everybody in the Twitterverse, whatever they're calling it now. Used to call it the information superhighway. They don't do that anymore. That's like a 25-year-old phrase. But regardless, get out there, hit the streets, hit the pavement. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Come on, get out there. If you like what you hear, don't forget to go to WGNRadio.com, hit the podcast prompt, then it'll bring another screen up, hit the prompt for this specific podcast. You hit that prompt that says Elton Jim's Captain Podcast, and my goodness gracious, you will be confronted with scores of podcasts. Just keep scrolling down and down and down. There's so many there for you to listen to. Listen to what we talked about before so you can know what we're going to talk about today. Today being episode number 363. And it makes sense, as I tell you many times, listen to the past so you can understand what we're talking about in the present. And once again, that advice, that guidance, that little adage comes into play. It's not my main topic, but I always promise you updates on the different progresses or regresses that happen in the world, in my world at least. I mean, that's ultimately, you know, why you're listening today, right? There's some interest you've got in what I've got to say, hopefully. and that interest is certainly much appreciated. So thank you very much for you both long time and newbies, if you will. For you long timers, hopefully you're all up to date. For your newbies, as I say, go to the WGNRadio.com prompt for podcasts and learn about what the heck this podcast is all about. A few weeks ago, this has been an interesting little thread of podcast topics. So several weeks, well, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago or so, the main topic of the podcast was concerning the whole idea and scenario of jury duty in relation to, at the time, the Donald Trump indictment in New York City, of which the former president has been indicted. And my take had nothing to do with whether you like Trump or not, or you know, whatever your politics are, nothing to do with that. It was more about if this case ever does go to a jury, and there is some question about the validity of it, so who knows? It could get thrown out. It could get settled. Who knows what's going to happen? It is certainly a scenario in progress, if you will. And but one of the aspects of it, if it ever does get to trial, as I was explaining, is that while most people try to get out of jury duty, when that summons comes in the mail, it's a forbidding piece of mail. As I said, it's an oversized envelope. You can almost always tell, even before you see the Board of Elections on the outside of the envelope and your name in that specific dark font. It's very, that font on the summons for jury duty is unique. It looks scary and intimidating. I think on purpose, but before you see it on the envelope, the size of that envelope gives you a hint, even before as you're maybe shuffling through your mail. But I was saying how, because it's going to be such a high profile case if it ever gets to court, and in today's world, if anyone has any kind of connection to anything in the public eye, they exploit it to the greatest degree, whatever they can do to get their 5 seconds of fame. You know, Andy Warhol said 15 minutes of fame about 50 years ago. Everybody will be famous for 15 minutes. Okay, that has become, it came true. So kudos to you, Andy, wherever you are. But in today's world, it's not 15 minutes anymore. Everything moves so fast. It's not 15 minutes. It's not 5 minutes. It's 5 seconds of fame. And people still clutch for it. Anything to get a like, anything to get on TikTok, anything to get on the news, anything that says, look at me, see me, people go for it today. There's always, what's funny is that reality television or social media, in many ways, is the lottery of the human condition. People play the lottery to get rich, right? So that's monetary. There's a monetary reward for playing the lotto. But as I think about it now, recognition, likes, views, fame in quotes, celebrity in quotes, those two terms have been completely diluted in today's society, but they still apply. They don't, and in some cases they do carry a lot of weight. I mean, there's a whole industry of influencers now. There are kids in college, people in college whose goal is not to become a lawyer, is not to become a doctor, is not to become a nurse, is not to become a marketing, whatever. Their goal is, I want to be an influencer. And why not? There's no real work involved there. There's no real training, right? Being an influencer is just being yourself in front of a camera. So it's the easiest job on earth. You're going to be yourself that day anyway, weren't you? So why not make some money at it? No preparation involved. You're just turning a camera on yourself and, oh, here I am this morning. And, you know, it's really warm outside and I don't know what I'm going to do today. But I might shave or I might wash my hair. But I don't know. I might just sit around today. You know, that's compelling content. But that's what sells today. But my point was that we are so... So think about that. Today, likes and views are like they satisfy, while the lottery satisfies your need or want for monetary reward, the internet, TikTok, social media, things like that, they serve your narcissism. They serve your psyche. It's like the lottery for your psychological side, not your monetary side, not your possession side, but your psychological side. When you get involved in social media, it's almost like that's, you're playing the lottery. Will I strike it rich? Will I get all these likes? Will I become an influencer? It's the same gamble, right? And there's a reward at the end. So it's kind of like social media is kind of like a psychological lottery for people. And my point about jury duty is that if you were on the Trump jury, my goodness, when the trial's going on, and certainly after it's over, people who are involved on the jury in that case, if it goes to trial, will definitely be interviewed by the media, will be going on social media and saying why they voted for whatever way. There was just a high-profile case here in Chicago concerning our major electrical utility. And several people were involved in a corruption scheme, including former CEOs and political lobbyists. And all four of them were found guilty. And then the next day, I was reading a story account of the verdict. And there were three or four or five jurors being quoted about the decision and why they voted the way they did to convict these people. That was never the case. And if there were some insights into why, they were few and far between. There was almost this, once again, I've talked many times in journalism, in the past there were many unwritten rules about what you did and what you didn't do. And to keep the sanctity of the jury room, jurors were off, you know, they were off the record. Well, they weren't even off, they were out of bounds. You know, the media didn't really approach them. And if they did, the jurors didn't say anything. But in today's world, anybody who has any information that might be interesting shares it. They even share information that is not interesting. We are sharing everything with everybody all the time, whether it's interesting or not, for that social media lottery win where we will become a viral. I mean, that's the $500 million lottery prize, going viral. That's the social media lottery prize. So my point was that it will be interesting to see how many people, instead of trying to usually get off of jury duty, if there was a Trump trial, given the high profile and the media interest in this, people will now be trying to get on a jury for the first time. Once again, social media completely flipping normalcy on its head, changing the paradigm. People always want to get out of jury duty, have wanted to do that since the jury system was invented. But in today's world, if there's a high-profile case, I believe that being on the jury, people will lie to get on it now. They will use their connections. Do you know somebody in the jury system? Yeah, I do. Why, do you want to get off of jury duty? No, I want to get on. What do you mean you want to get on? Yeah, I want to get on that Trump trial. Do you have a contact in the jury system, in the Board of Elections, or you know, in the, not the Board of Elections, but you know, can you get me? Oh yeah. Let me see what I can do. It used to be the other way around. Well, then the irony was, I was talking about this, and literally, the day that I posted that jury duty podcast, guess what I got in the mail? A summons to appear for jury duty. it was surreal. It was wild. I saw that envelope. I saw it when I pulled the mail out of my mailbox. I could tell I got that oversized envelope. I knew it before I shuffled through and sure enough saw it. I'm like, you, wow, holy cow. But I did only have a standby jury summons, which means that you are not obligated to definitely appear to potentially be on a jury, but you are a standby juror. So if they need extra people for whatever reason, then you would go in, but most likely you probably would not have to appear. So I, just as an update here, I told you about it. May 3rd was the day I was supposed to appear. So on May 2nd, you were supposed to call the night before, like at 4:30, the night before you are to appear. If you have a standby jury summons, just if you have that, if you have a summons to appear, you have to appear. But the standby one is does give you an out to some extent. And so at 4:30, the day before, I had to call, and there's a recording, and they ask you, you know, what's the date on, you make sure you check that it says standby jury on the top of your summons. Make sure the date is for tomorrow. Then they ask you which courthouse you were assigned to. And there's a prompt for each one. And I pressed it. And sure enough, I was told I did not need to appear. So I did not have to go to jury duty. I don't think that in my courtroom, Donald Trump was going to be there. So I didn't miss anything big. But now here's the one thing that I found a little interesting. So, you know, the whole idea is when you get the jury summons and you appear, then it will be a certain amount of you go back into the system until your name comes up again. And it's mostly 5, 6, 7 years later. So rather than get an extension, because I you know, it's you can ask for an extension, which just prolongs it. They'll say, okay, well, we'll give you an extension, but we're going to put you back in the system and you'll probably get another recall in about 6 months. For me, it was about a year, but it was still, I still got called again, even though it was a standby situation. But the thing is, if you do appear, whether you serve on a jury or at least you show up and you're never called to appear on the jury, or sometimes you're not even called to be interviewed for it, as long as you did your duty to show up that day, then once again, you go back in the system, but it most likely will be 5 or 6 years before you're called again, which I found interesting on this situation with the standby jury system is that now, okay, I sort of got this little waiver one, like, oh, you didn't get a summons to appear, but I still had to wait and call. I could have gotten called. But so now I will get thrown back into the system again and may get called again soon after some period of time, probably shorter than later, and possibly be called not for our standby status, but also to be called that I have to appear. So, yeah, I was off the hook for May 3rd, but I certainly will probably be expecting, or at least maybe, I don't know, we'll get called again within a year or so. And maybe we'll have to appear. We'll see. But one way or another, the jury duty for right now, the jury duty saga is over. But it was a very, very coincidental situation to be talking about it. And the day that it posts online, I get the jury duty summons, and I was fairly confident that that I wouldn't have to appear. But still, you never know. And when I hit that button, I hit the prompt for my courthouse, and they said, you know, and they stretch it out. They keep you hanging. You know, when you call in, it's a recording, and it doesn't just say if you're a standby juror, you don't have to come tomorrow. Click. That would be nice. No. They stretch it out. They're like, you've waited like, you know, 3 or 4 weeks since you got this summons, And we're going to keep you waiting now in the standby thing for at least another 20 seconds, another minute, which will seem like 20 minutes. But we're not going to tell you right away. So first they go through the explanation. If you're a standby juror for your call, make sure that there's the standby juror thing on the top of your thing. Make sure that it's for the right date. So they're giving you all that stuff. And now, you know, you will go into this prompt for your courthouse. If you're going for this courthouse, set one. For this set two. So now you have to wait for your courthouse to be named. You're waiting again. Then you click that. It says now that you have been. Oh, so now you're summoned. And they go through that stuff again, you know, for this courthouse. And you will not need to be. You know, to appear finally. And then they give you this other caveat. However, just know that now your name may be called again to serve, to definitely appear as opposed to be a standby. So that was not a quick phone call either. And it's almost like the interesting thing is waiting for the verdict of your jury duty decision is feeling like a defendant in a case to see, am I on or off? Am I guilty or innocent? But I got pardoned by the governor at the last second, so I didn't have to go to standby jury selection. I was going to have to go in Rolling Meadows, Illinois. Suburb here, which would have been kind of far too, so it's anywhere in Cook County, so that would have been a nice little drive as well. That would have taken a pretty big chunk out of the day just for travel there and back. But anyway, dodged a bullet, got a last minute reprieve from the governor. So no jury duty. So the jury duty saga is done for now. But I will keep you updated on future jury duty developments. Hopefully that won't be for another 5 or 6 years. What I really wanted to talk about today, though, was I said, though, always giving you updates, always keeping you informed, always keeping you updated on everything we talk about here. That's what this whole podcast is about. It's a dialogue between you and me. Sure, there's hopefully several thousand other people, tens of thousands, millions listening. I have no idea. It could be just you and me, to be honest with you. But regardless, I don't care. I'm just happy to be sharing with anybody who wants to listen. So just giving you a little update on that. But what I really want to talk about today, and interestingly, a new wrinkle to this topic just occurred, in addition to what I was going to talk about anyway. In the past week or so, one of television's late night hosts, literally, of the Late Late Show on CBS, James Corden, retired from the show, quit the show, did not decide to renew his contract after 8 years. He started in 2015, and he was on CBS after The Late Show, now with Steve Colbert. And it shocked a lot of people because even though the late night host and the late night show aura has diminished quite a bit from what it used to be on television, it's still a high profile job. It still is a well paying job. I mean, even for an upstart, you're going to get a $5-7 million payday a year, especially on network television. So it's a pretty good gig. It's an hour on network television. It's a prestige type of thing, even though, as I said, some of the prestige or the cachet of the late night host has been diminished since the days of Johnny Carson, who has been gone now, for 30 years. He's almost been off the air, I think, and now as long, was it 93 or 94? I think it was 93 or 92. So he's been off the air now longer than he was on the air with the show. I think he did the show for 30 years. Yeah, I think he went off in 92. So it's been more than 30 years now that he's been off the show. So for some people, they don't even know who Johnny Carson was, or they don't really even care anymore, you know. It would be probably similar to the way that many of us who watched Johnny and grew up with Johnny reacted to the person who he replaced, who was Jack Parr. Johnny took over in 62, and yes, he went in 1992 was when he was done, right around now in May of 92. So he's been off the air for 31 years this year, and he hosted the show for 30 years. So he's been off the air now longer than he hosted it. And of course, he passed away a few years ago. But I remember as a kid growing up, and Johnny was the host now. And then I would hear about the previous host, Jack Parr, who was very popular in his day, and he walked away from the show, which shocked a lot of people because he was very popular. And it, once again, especially at that, in that era in the 60s, that late night Tonight Show was huge. You know, I have to understand, once again, there was the options for television in the early 60s were very small, even here in the United States. There were only three networks. So to get a show was, it was not like today where people have their own YouTube channels and TikTok and all that other stuff. It was very competitive, and it was like winning the lottery. If you got a television show of any kind, if you got a television job on a network of any kind, that you had won the lottery there, because though there were not that many opportunities, and to be hosting the Tonight Show was a big deal. And Jack Parr, for whatever reasons, whether it was personal reasons, he was kind of a quirky guy. He had I think he had some emotional problems that he had talked about. But when he left, we always heard about, oh, Jack Parr a lot. There were references. And then as the years went on, you didn't hear as many references to Jack Parr, because then it was 20 years since Johnny took over for Jack Parr. But in the early to mid 70s, there were still references to Jack Parr, and he was still alive, and he would show up every so often, but you would hear about that. But it didn't really have any resonance because you didn't see them, and you didn't see reruns of any on some documentaries, or sometimes you would see some old reruns of the Jack Parr Tonight Show. But it was different, and there was not a lot of footage there in the early days of TV. A lot of times, all those old tapes were destroyed, or they didn't even record the shows. So there's not a huge amount of Jack Parr Tonight Show footage like there is with Johnny. But even some of the early Johnny footage doesn't exist. It was destroyed or it was lost or whatever. And then obviously by the late 60s and early 70s, they realized, okay, wait a minute, we've got a treasure trove here of material. And now a lot of the Tonight Show clips, you can see them online, and you see some of the big celebrities of the past. So from a historical standpoint, it's great to be able to see some of these legends that you may have heard about. But we didn't really see a lot of the Jack Parr era in retrospect, in reruns, because a lot of it didn't exist. So I heard the name growing up, but I didn't really have a real connection to it. So I'm sure for many people now, younger people, when they talk about late night, they will always bring up Johnny Carson in some reference point. But I'm sure for younger people, it's a name that they've heard, but they never probably even watched Johnny, even though he was on for 30 years. So Corden left, and it was a shock to some extent, because it's a good gig and it's a high profile gig, and even in James Corden's situation, it was almost like, and I'm not putting the guy down necessarily, but it was almost like stealing money, because with the time slot, 12:30 in the morning on the East Coast, 11:30 in the Central Time Zone. Oh, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be up late watching that late of a show anyway. The Tonight Show, which is on at 11:30 Eastern, 10:30 Central, even that was considered late. People would always say, "Oh, you know, I put the Tonight Show on and I fall asleep with Johnny Carson every night. I go to bed with Johnny Carson every night." The show, Johnny Carson's show initially, The Tonight Show, was for many years until the late 70s, early 80s, was like an hour and a half. It was a long show. And then it cut down to an hour. But for a while, it was an hour and a half show. So people would fall asleep. So in today's world, obviously, you don't have to watch anything live. And few people do. Everybody's watching, you know, everybody's DVRing, everybody's recording, everybody's just watching clips now. So James Corden had a really sweet situation in that, it was more for, can you, in James Corden thing, it wasn't the ratings so much, because they weren't expected to draw that much ratings given the time slot. So it was a question of just getting enough people and monetizing the show in ways to bring money in. If you can't get it from the ratings and advertisers, for sponsorships of things. And once again, the whole goal today of even the three main talk shows, Jimmy Kimmel, The Tonight Show with Fallon, and The Late Show with Colbert, most people don't even watch those entire shows anymore. So their goal, it's an hour show. So with commercials in an hour, it's probably about 45 minutes of real content. And the real goal in today, this just goes to show you the shift in thing. Everything has shifted so much because of once again, social media, smartphone technology, attention spans. The goal now for those late night talk shows is not even the ratings. Certainly they count for something. The actual viewers who watch it, that will still always be the main deciding factor. But then it is within that 45 minutes, if the host and their staff can come up with at least three good minutes in any way, whether it's a good interview, whether it's a good monologue, whether it's a good little set piece when they talk, they do a little piece from the thing, they do a skit, if they do a pre-recorded segment, whatever it is, the expectations now, it just goes to show you how different it is, because everybody's got on a short attention span, everybody's watching on their smartphones. Those late night talk shows don't even really have to deliver 45 minutes of solid entertainment. If they could come up with one good chunk of 3 minutes or less that they can edit out of that show and post as a video clip. Oh, here's what happened on the Steve Colbert show last night, or here's what happened last night on Jimmy Fallon show. If they can get one good clip that goes viral, that gets a lot of likes and it gets a lot of views, that's considered success. And that's why those shows really, I'll be honest, I don't watch any of them on a regular basis. As I was a little kid growing up and I grew into a teenager and into my 20s, yes, I did watch Johnny Carson, but even not all the time. but certainly much more than I do these guys now. I watched Letterman after Carson in my 20s and 30s, and then, well, in my 20s, and then I did watch him when he hosted his own show, the one that Colbert has now at 10:35 Central Time. But even not every night. But I certainly watched the late night shows much more. But now that when Letterman retired, I stopped watching them altogether. Not a fan of Jimmy Fallon's at all. At all. Terrible interviewer. Fawns over the guests. Laughs at everything. If you really want to see, you know, once again, although, you know, Jimmy, NBC loves Jimmy Fallon. I don't know why. I don't find him that funny. I didn't find him that cute and funny and charming and whatever when he used to be on Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live, and he used to break up and laugh it all the time. He's just doing that now to an even nth degree, but he's a terrible interviewer. His big shtick, once again, his shtick, those three, that prize 3 minutes that you can make into a video clip to post the next day, his big shtick is basically playing games. That's what his shtick was. He plays games with celebrities. Drinking games, ping pong, password, even, you watch NBC, Jimmy Fallon is all over NBC, not just as a late night host, but he's producing shows. He's on Password, the new version of Password. There's something about My Jam. He creates these shows. He's on these. I mean, I don't get it. That's my personal opinion. I just don't get it. I don't think he's that funny. Yeah, he does some good impersonations, but I don't think that is enough to get the kind of exposure and longevity that he's had. And like I said, even his shtick with playing the games with celebrities, it's real easy. It didn't take a lot of creativity, but that's his shtick because his interviews are terrible. He laughs over, as I said before, I think he's the worst of the late night hosts because I just don't think he's a host. He's a sketch comedian. That's what he was on Saturday Night Live. I don't see him in this role at all, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think he's in third place. So it's not like he's dominating, but it is what it is. So whatever. He's in a much better position than I am. So I can say all I want, but he's got the last laugh. So whatever. But I don't have to enjoy him. But what's so funny is if you want to see Jimmy Fallon, if you want to see why I'm not a fan of Jimmy Fallon's, comedy has changed so much over the last 30 or 40 years. It always does. Don't get me wrong. But the kind of comedy that I grew up in used to really poke fun and do satire. I love satire and I love parody. A lot of my comedy and a lot of what I try to do and say is satirical. You know, a lot of things that I say with a wink, you know. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not lying about anything, but I'm also exaggerating things and saying things in a satirical manner because that's what I grew up with. That's the kind of comedy that was popular when I was growing up, at least the ones that I enjoyed. I never liked slapstick. I'm not a big fan of slapsticks. That's why I don't like the Jackass things. People jumping off of stuff, people getting hurt. I never found that interesting or funny. So go online. One of the best TV shows ever, which was full of satire and parody, and this is what I grew up on. The early days of Saturday Night Live, that's what they used to do. They used to do satires and parodies on things. Even the old Carol Burnett show used to do parodies on commercials and things like that. And that's the kind of comedy that I enjoyed. SCTV, which came along around the same time as Saturday Night Live, based on Second City and many of the performers on SCTV, had done some stints in Chicago. Most of them were from the Canadian branch of Second City. But there were some that did some time here in Chicago, Harold Ramis. But go online, go on YouTube, and look up SCTV Sammy Maudlin Show, M-A-U-D-L-I-N. And the name, the word Maudlin is not there just because it's a funny-sounding name. Once again, there is parody and satire and irony in that name based on what the sketch is. But go on YouTube and look up Sammy Maudlin, because it's a takeoff on TV talk shows. Very biting, very satirical. And the host is Sammy Maudlin, and he completely fawns over his guests. And he's there just to compliment them, and everything is great, and you're great, and that's great, and everything. It's just over the top. Laughing ridiculously over the jokes. You name it. He's got a sidekick, laughs at everything, just like Ed McMahon. It was a total takeoff on the talk show genre, taken to an extreme, because many times the hosts will, that was a great set. That was good stuff. That was funny. You got to always compliment your guests. Well, the idea here was that you got to take this to the nth degree. That's what parody and satire do. If you watch this, so they were making fun of guests, or they were making fun of hosts who are fawning and overdoing their compliments and overdoing all of their, praise. Oh, you're the greatest this, that's the funniest of that. If the person would come on and make a line or a joke, they would fall over laughing. It was a total parody and takeoff on the fawning talk show host. The irony is, this was a parody. This was a biting satire on that from 40 years ago about how silly and stupid it is, how funny it is, because it's so outrageous and so unhip. And that, if you watch clips of the Sammy Maudlin show, it's the Jimmy Fallon show that's playing it for legit, for playing it for real. It just goes to show you the way tastes have changed and comedy has changed. 40 years ago, if you were hosting a show like Jimmy Fallon does, you would be skewered for that. You would be made fun of. You're a hack. Jimmy Fallon probably gets paid $15 million for doing the Sammy Maudlin show. So 40 years ago, we made fun of people who fawned and laughed at every joke and fell off their chair and got up and walked off and all that other over-the-top BS that Jimmy Fallon does, because, oh, you're so funny. I can't even sit in my chair. Oh, I'm falling off the chair. You're so funny. All that fake showbiz stuff. That's Jimmy Fallon's part and parcel. 40 years ago, they made fun of that. But watch, go on YouTube and get SCTV Sammy Maudlin Show, and I guarantee you, any episode that you pick, it's not even episodes, it's a short little skit segment, 4 or 5 minutes. But if you look at the way the Sammy Maudlin Show, which is a complete satire, complete parody, condemning this kind of talk show host for being so over the top and flattering their guests. If you watch Jimmy Fallon, that's what Jimmy Fallon does for legit. And for some reason, that's selling. That's, I don't know. People are accepting it. So every time I watch Jimmy Fallon, I just think of the Sammy Maudlin show, and I have to shut it off, even if I try to watch it, because I'm like, this is Sammy Maudlin. But hey, more power to him. I don't know why people find him interesting or funny. It's terrible. And the irony is, I guarantee you, the people, Eugene Levy, who everybody, of course, knows from Schitt's Creek now, you know, he was a founding member of the SCTV cast, did some great skits on SCTV. To me, SCTV was better than Saturday Night Live in terms of consistency. Saturday Night Live had some amazing skits, don't get me wrong, in its heyday, from 1975, you know, through 1980, it was the glory days. And then, of course, in the 90s, there were new people. But that first cast, you know, with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi and Gilda Radner and Jane Curtin, you know, and so many more, Chevy Chase, they created some great skits. You know, the Coneheads, Weekend Update, The Wild and Crazy Guys, The Bees. I mean, there was a million things. Don't get me wrong. But on a consistent basis, SCTV really, because there were some clunkers on Saturday Night Live too that we forget about. But SCTV was filmed. It wasn't live. So they had the advantage of editing. And so I get it. But the people on SCTV, like Eugene Levy and John Candy and Rick Moranis and Harold Ramis, and Maureen O'Hara from Schitt's Creek, and Joe Flaherty, and Andrea Martin, and Dave Thomas, and later Martin Short. Listen to those names. They've all gone on to very influential and important and successful careers in other areas, movies and television, you name it. So that show was packed with talent. And they did parodies and satires. That's basically what they did. And I actually enjoyed SCTV more than Saturday Night Live in many ways. And so if you don't know about SCTV, go back and watch some of that. And watch Bob and Doug McKenzie. And as I said, watch the Sammy Maudlin show. And watch John Candy do Orson Welles. Hilarious. And watch Joe Flaherty do Count Floyd, the like a Svengoolie type of, oh, I mean, it's hilarious stuff. They were so sharp and so quick-witted, and they really had an eye for satire. And they found the absurdity in so many things and turned it on its head, and they found the absurdity of these fawning talk show hosts, and that was the Sammy Maudlin show. And unfortunately for us, that is now the Jimmy Fallon show. But once again, I'm not a big fan of Jimmy Kimmel's. I really don't get his humor anyway. And then I'm not a big fan of Colbert. Way too political for me. He's trying to, you know, he made his bones with Trump. That show was almost canceled. Steve Colbert's, if not for Donald Trump, Steve Colbert loses his show. I don't even think he would deny that at this point. Donald Trump gave him life. He made fun of Donald Trump. There were enough people that didn't like Donald Trump who's flocked to Colbert. And Colbert, you know, wears his politics on his sleeve. And he was a Trump basher every night. And that's how, and things were so bad that Jimmy Fallon doing the Sammy Maudlin show was the number one talk show. That's how bad things were. That's how bad Jimmy Kimmel was, that he couldn't even beat, you know, Jimmy Fallon. But Colbert was you know, took over from Letterman, and his ratings were not good. And if it wasn't for Donald Trump providing Steve Colbert an audience and a forum to bash Trump every night, Steve Colbert is fired. You don't even know who he's gone. Someone else is hosting that show, no question about it. I think Steve Gobert would admit that. I think he admitted as much because things were not good. So the big three in that coveted, 11:30, 12, 10:30 Central slot. I'm not even that impressed by the big three. Then we have the late shows after that with Seth Meyers, once again from Saturday Night Live, and then James Corden. Seth Meyers on NBC and James Corden on CBS. I don't even know what's after Kimmel on ABC. I don't know if they still have Nightline. I don't even know because I don't watch Kimmel, so I certainly don't watch what's on after Kimmel. I don't even know anymore. But I do know that there's Seth Meyers on CBS or on NBC and up to now James Corden on CBS. And I didn't watch either one of them. I was never a big fan of Seth Meyers really either on Saturday Night Live, so I don't think I'm missing anything there. And James Corden, once again, like Jimmy Kimmel, like Jimmy Fallon, not a talk show host. Talented guy. Like I said, Jimmy Fallon does some great impersonations, and he's pretty good in sketches, depending. But it's his impersonations that really are his best forte. And that's why he does so many on the show, because that's his forte. Like I said, his shtick is, playing the games for his 3-minute clip. Jimmy Fallon, that's his shtick. Steve Colbert, his big thing is mostly his monologue, especially during the Trump years. And Kimmel's shtick, I don't even know what Kimmel's shtick is. I don't know what his. I just don't get him. I don't think he's that funny. Once again, I'm sorry. But I don't even know what his 3-minute, what's his clip? What's his 3-minute shtick? I don't even know. His monologue is not as sharp as Colbert's. He doesn't have the game show, playing games of celebrity stuff. I don't know what Jimmy Kimmel's 3-minute nightly clip next day is. I don't watch it, obviously. Now, with James Corden, interesting story in James Corden all round, because that gig, those late night gigs are coveted because of they're on 5 days a week, so you're getting amazing exposure. You're on a network. Even though there's all this streaming, there's still a lot of people watching network television. So there's good salaries there for the host. There is prestige. Because of that show, James Corden has hosted other award shows. He appears on other things. There's prestige. Even though the audience is a fraction of what it used to be, like what Johnny Carson used to pull in, there's still prestige to it. Not as much as there used to be, but it's still there. If you have one of those gigs, you won the lottery, and you hold on to that for dear life. And that was what was so shocking for so many, to see James Corden give it up after 8 years. I'm sure he made a good chunk of money, more than he ever needs, because he's walking away from the show. But it was a big surprise. Now, his story is very interesting. He is not a talk show host, never was a talk show host, wasn't even a stand-up comedian. Most of the other guys were all stand-up comedians or even sketch comedians from shows like that. Steve Colbert has a Second City Chicago connection. Jimmy Fallon, Saturday Night Live. Jimmy Kimmel, not so much on those, but he did some other, segments. He had his man show on Comedy Central, and he used to appear on one of the sports shows on Sundays to make his picks and stuff. So, but James Corden, British, first of all, not even an American actor where people have a lot of exposure to him, had much more fame and notoriety, name recognition in England on television shows and in the West End theater. And then he came to the United States and appeared on Broadway. And once again, talk about luck and being anointed and not even, you know, something falling into your lap that you had no idea for and no plan for. That's what happened to him. He was on stage doing a Broadway show. I think he won the Tony for it. And the head of NBC, the head of CBS was at the show. And he sees this guy, and Craig Ferguson was doing a late night show and had a popular show, and he had some good shtick as well. He had his 3-minute clip. He used to have that puppet, a skeleton puppet. But that was kind of before the whole, 3-minute clip TikTok thing really was popular. But he had a good following. But I don't know if they fired him or he quit. But they're looking to replace Craig Ferguson. And Les Moonves, the president of CBS at the time, goes to see James Corden in this Broadway show. And while there were a lot of names being thrown around, mostly stand-up comedians that had a lot of name recognition, Les Moonves goes to this play and says, you know what? This guy is very funny and personable and likable. And so I think he would be good to host the Ferguson slot. And everybody was like, who? What? Where? What? But you see the right people, the people in power, and they can change your life. And Les Moonves chooses James Corden. You can't even get a longer shot than that was. But hey, you go out there, you put yourself out there, and someone sees you. That's the thing about showbiz. You never know who's watching, and maybe the sun shines on you, and it shined on James Corden. So he gets the job. Very little name recognition here in the United States. Broadway people may know him. English people may know him, but the majority of people don't. But that doesn't matter. They had the CBS, promotion machine behind him. And then I have to say, I never watched a full episode of James Corden because, once again, I enjoy a talk show that is a talk show, that is interesting in interviews. James Corden was not an interviewer. He was, just like Jimmy Fallon, not a good interviewer. And Steve Colbert is a good interviewer, pretty good. Jimmy Kimmel's not bad. At least they've got some basis of a talk show format. Fallon and Corden were just they were performers. They're running around just trying to keep you entertained for an hour. They're not talk show hosts. So the interviews with the celebrities, even if it was an interesting celebrity, you found it interesting. Jimmy Fallon and James Corden were not going to talk about anything interesting because they fawned over the people. The interviews were not insightful. They were not incisive. They were just top level stuff that everybody knows and just fawning over them. So I was not really interested. But I have to give credit to James Corden. Ironically, even though he was in that 12:30, 11:30 slot where hardly anybody is watching, of all the late night talk shows, so I will give him credit for this. I was not a fan of his as a talk show host. But in terms of creating the perfect, brilliant, and I will use that word, brilliant idea to create that 3-minute clip that I was telling you about before that you can edit out of that show and post the next day and say, here's what happened on the James Corden show. You might want to watch it. Nobody in the current crop, and I would even put that with some of the past people. Certainly Jay Leno didn't have any shtick like that. He was number one for 20 years. Letterman had his top 10 list. Letterman had those. Letterman had several of those. Letterman kind of created that. I mean, Johnny Carson started it, really. He had his, you know, his Karnak and his Tea Time movie thing. You know, he had his regular skits that were popular. So he started with Johnny, really. Letterman picked up the mantle and did it as well, and did it very well, maybe the best. But I have to give my props to James Corden, even though I was not a fan of his and never really watched a full episode of the show in 8 years. But there's no denying, and you have to say, that his carpool karaoke idea of sitting with a musical performer in a car and singing just those two and singing that performer's songs, like we all do, singing in a car when we're alone or singing with our friends, the songs on the radio, singing. It was the do it with the celebrity was genius. And I will throw that word out too. Genius. It was relatable. It was funny. It was cool to watch. Everything about carpool karaoke was perfect, a perfect entertaining segment. So kudos to James Corden. I think it was his idea, because he's talked about how he was always singing in his car, you know, with his sisters and his parents. So no question of any of the talk show hosts, none of the current ones came close to matching the brilliance and the popularity of the carpool karaoke segment. And that's what kept his show on the air. It was a brainstorm. It was a stroke of genius. And because as a regular show, you know, once again, interviewing celebrities, he was not good at that. He had another segment that was fairly good called Crosswalk Musical, where they would stage a song from a Broadway musical, even with some sets and costumes, in the time that it takes for a car to be stopped at a red light. So what is that, 15, 20 seconds? They would sing a thing from, you know, Phantom of the Opera or whatever. They would do a whole big thing, and then they run off the street when the light changed. And they would get the reactions of the people at the stoplight. That was a good bit too. But it wasn't as perfect as the carpool karaoke. So that was Corden's claim to fame. And once again, he deserves it. He wasn't a good talk show host. He was an entertainer. And both of those segments I just said to you, the carpool karaoke and especially the crosswalk musical, they played to his comedic strengths. He was a Broadway performer and singer and comedian. And both of those segments play to his strength. Now, what his strength wasn't was being a talk show host. That was the forum for those skits, those segments. So I don't think he was a successful talk show host. But in terms of those segments, especially carpool karaoke, brilliant. Especially they did a segment with Paul McCartney, which is a classic. It really is. I give full props to James Corden for some of those things. You know, his Mariah Carey segment, his Stevie Wonder segment. He's personal friends with Adele. She did it. But none of them were as great as the Paul McCartney one, not only because of just the magnitude of Paul McCartney's fame, to be sitting in a car with Paul McCartney and singing Beatles and McCartney songs with him. I mean, that's just, you can't get much closer to Nirvana if you're a pop culture person, right? But then to expand it and take McCartney to Liverpool and go to different places where he grew up, like his childhood home, and then walk around Penny Lane, where he wrote the song and see the barber shop and all the little locations of Penny Lane, and then to walk past Strawberry Fields and have him sign the Strawberry Fields sign with all the other people and the graffiti around it, and then do a surprise show for people in a pub. And Paul McCartney, they're in some pub and the curtain opens and there's Paul McCartney and his band performing a show for like 20 people in a pub in Liverpool. Perfect, perfect. I mean, once again, you can't, that was genius. But as a talk show host, he wasn't that good. So he's leaving. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. I don't watch him, never did. And I didn't even watch the carpool karaoke all that time, every night, or even all the clips. But I have to say, a genius idea. But, you know, he walked away from probably $6 or $7 million a year. And he basically said, you know what, it's time. I want to go back to England. I want to raise my kids in England. Apparently, maybe a couple of some of his parents, both or some family members have had some health issues. He wanted to spend time with them. A very, very gutsy move to give up one of those coveted spots that give you fame and fortune and opportunity. He's only in his mid-40s. He certainly can do other things, but he'll probably never have the worldwide exposure on a nightly basis that he had on that show. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens to him, but it just goes to show you the realities of that world too. They are not replacing him with another talk show. Because of streaming cutting into so much of network television, they're looking to cut the budget. And even though, in many ways, it's easier to promote an existing show than to launch a new one because of name recognition, you have to spend so much money in marketing and promotion and hope that it catches on, as opposed to even of a show like Corden's, which didn't even draw a million people a night, under a million people. Like 970,000 people. So for a network show, that's not a lot of people. But because of the carpool karaoke and their way to sponsor things and monetize the show was able to stay on. Because in their minds, it was easier to promote an existing show than launch a new one. But interesting enough, when Corden decided to quit, they are not replacing that show with another talk show because of the costs that it takes. I mean, you know, Corden did a lot of elaborate things. He did many of these big segments with Tom Cruise. They'd go to, you know, and like I said, that McCartney thing, they flew to Liverpool. Tom Cruise, they were going to different cities and they were flying in planes. There's a lot of production costs there. In fact, I just read an interesting little news story about it that, you know, yes, Corden left, but did he really? You know, did they really try to keep him? Or did he kind of get fired? Because apparently that show was losing $20 million a year. It cost $65 million to produce that show each year with all the production costs to do all these different segments and all these different things. $65 million, but only took in revenue $45 million a year. So that show was losing $20 million in today's world where the networks are losing viewers because of streaming and other, you know, platforms and options that people have. It's pretty hard to swallow a $20 million deficit. So now they're going to put on a game show, I believe, in that time slot, which it will be much less to produce. It might get less audience, but it's at 12:30 at night, so who cares? It's gravy now. If it doesn't cost you $20 million, you've got to keep the station on, so you put something halfway entertaining that doesn't cost a lot of money, as opposed to a show that has its moments but still is costing you $20 million. You're losing $20 million on it, which was the case of James Corden. So it'd be very interesting to see what's going to happen moving forward in the late-night world. because people's attention spans and the cachet of the late night talk show, while it still has some of that, is not as much as it used to be in the heyday of it during the Johnny Carson years. Johnny Carson defeat, many people went up against Johnny Carson on other networks and they never could unseat him. But we've seen over the last 30 years that Letterman was initially, when he took over on CBS, he was initially number one. And then Jay Leno took over from him because Jay Leno exploited the OJ trial with the dancing Itos and all that. So there have been these moments. And then, as I said before, Fallon came in, incredibly, was number one for many years. And then Trump came in and Colbert overtook him. So much so that I think that Fallon might even sometimes be in third place. There really wasn't a lot of competition after Letterman left. So Fallon went to number one, and then when there was some competition, he fell to third. That goes to show you how much viewer loyalty he had. Johnny Carson was undisputed. No one ever, they threw a lot of big names at him to overtake him. Joan Rivers, Chevy Chase, Jerry Lewis at one time in his heyday. Pat Say, all these names, nobody could touch. You know, Arsenio Hall could never touch Johnny Carson. They had some of their moments. Arsenio had a popular show for a while, but at the end of the day, Johnny was king. But those days are over. You see the late night, you know, people jump around from one to two to three. In terms of the ratings, but the overall impact of the show, the overall ratings of the show don't come close. It's more at this point a television tradition than a television necessity or an appointment television viewing anymore. Those shows are really now expected to provide, as I said before, 3 minutes of good content to have a clip the next day because nobody's really watching them live. So the hosts, don't get me wrong, high profile, great gig, well paid, more power to you. But in terms of the overall impact that shows like that used to have, you know, it's just not the same. So James Corden, congratulations. I hope you have a good retirement or whatever you're going to do. I hope you have enough money saved in the bank. And kudos to you for coming up with Carpool Karaoke. But to be honest with you, I'm not really going to miss James Corden because I never really saw him. I watched his farewell special. And after I watched that hour, I said, now I know why I didn't watch him. Interesting, but not enough to captivate me to watch him again. Talented guy. No question. But not really my cup of tea. So James Corden leaves. We lose another talk show. And in the grand scheme, it doesn't really seem to make all that much difference. What I would suggest you do, go on YouTube and look up SCTV and prepare to laugh your butt off. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 363. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screen.